It's Ian Pickus. We're back in the Congressional Corner today with David Hawkins, senior editor of the American Leader, who formerly worked at the Fulcrum and CQ and Roll Call. Right now, of course, the Democrats are gathered for their convention in Chicago. But I want to go back a little bit and talk about the last convention, the Republicans. And that was the coming out moment for the Ohio Senator J.D. Vance as former President Trump's pick as vice president this time around. What did you make of the selection, David?
Well, at the time, again, you know, as we talked about at the end of last week, you know, so much has happened in the intervening weeks. And at the time J.D. Vance was picked, it seemed as though Donald Trump had this election in the bag. I mean, he certainly was acting like he did. All the polling was showing him ahead in all the swing states. He seemed quite confident. And so he seemed to turn, and so it made some sense that he was not turning at the end to a running mate who could balance the ticket or offset his weaknesses if he's willing to acknowledge them, but that he was sort of picking a successor, somebody who to take the mantle of the MAGA movement on after the Trump era ends, assuming that it would last at least another 4 years. J.D. Vance was a favorite of Donald Trump Jr., who also, you know, has stature as a leader of the, you know, of his father's MAGA movement. I don't think there was no talk that Donald Trump Sr. was going to pass the mantle to Donald Trump Jr. But so J.D. Vance, you know, seemed to meet that moment as some, you know, Trump's ready to anoint a successor. Now, the fact that he picked someone, they seem to, of course, underestimate, I think, the degree to which J.D. Vance's previous life as a best-selling MAGA and Donald Trump critic, they seem to very much think that they could get past that in a way that they don't seem to have. And they certainly, in hindsight, don't seem to have vetted him and all of his past statements in the way they might have, the famous childless cat lady bit.
And a lot of text messages sent to former friends and colleagues, for sure. So is he a liability for Trump, or is Trump correct when he was quoted as saying they're voting for the top of the ticket?
I think Donald Trump is totally correct. That was, of course, one of the sharpest digs at J.D. Vance that you could come up with when asked if he thought J.D. Vance was a liability. He didn't stick up for J.D. Vance. He essentially said J.D. Vance isn't important, yeah, which is sort of a little bit harsh. But yes, I mean, I think Donald Trump is, to use the overused Latin phrase, sui generis, he's one of a kind. And as much as any presidential nominee in American history, you know, it is his persona and his vibe and his presentation that people are going to consider when they go into the voting booth or sit down at their desk to fill out their mail ballot.
I want to take the conversation to the time between November 5th and next January. We know that Vance has differed from former Vice President Mike Pence on the question of alternate electors and what he might do if he were in the position to deny an election result. And, right, you know, former President Trump obviously is already raising doubts about this outcome. So we've talked a lot about what happened after the 2020 election. But what kind of fears do you have about what might happen next time if the result doesn't go the Republicans' way?
Well, I absolutely believe that Donald Trump will contest it vigorously if it's remotely close. As you smartly point out, J.D. Vance will still have a vote on certifying the election results, not quite as much power over the process as Mike Pence had as a sitting vice president, and of course when he famously said he was not going to support Trump's efforts to essentially steal the election. But J.D. Vance is a senator from Ohio still. He will presumably hang on to his Senate seat so that he can have a role to play in trying to press the Trump-Vance ticket's case that the election election results need to be overturned if the Harris ticket wins. Now, all that having been said, I think there is a fundamental difference between January 6, 2021 and January 6, 2025, which is that Donald Trump will not be the sitting president. Therefore, he will not have the same He will not have the same legal powers over the process. In other words, if there's protests, if there's violence, it will not be up to him, to call out the National Guard or the troops or not. And maybe more importantly than that, he will not have the political stature as a former president, as a non-incumbent president, to pressure his colleagues anymore. And I still think, I do think it is an open question, at what point does the Republican, intense loyalty to Donald Trump as the, it's the party of Donald Trump now, at what point does that break? Does it break if he loses the popular vote 3 elections in a row? Does it break if Harrison wins the presidency decisively? Do they just walk away from him? I think that's an open question that I think is a more pointed question now that Donald Trump is not in office, whereas in January 6, 2021, he was still in office and could arguably have figured out a way to stay there.
I want to ask about another erstwhile Trump critic. We had talked on this show about Elise Stefanik, the Northern New York congresswoman and latter-day MAGA supporter. She was on the shortlist at one time to be vice presidential candidate, and you at one point thought that she might be the pick. Where does this leave her? And I should say that, she is seen as a lock to win re-election in the House, but clearly she's got higher ambitions.
Right. She clearly does have higher ambitions, and you're right, and you're always so kind to me by going back and checking out what I said.
We do record these.
Yeah, these things are preserved for eternity. Yes, I was. I thought that she made a lot of sense for him in many ways, and it seemed like he was interested in her, but yet she did not make the final three, the final three being Burgum, Rubio, and J.D. Vance. She still has a bright future. She is latter day, and the latter day adopters are some of the most fervent. She seems quite fervently with him now. Now, given in light of my last answer, I want to say this as kindly as I can. She's politically opportunistic. She goes with the flow. She knew that Trump was the power, and suddenly she was on Trump's side. Would she be the kind of person, if Trump loses again but contests the election, that would be interested in saying maybe now is the time to have a break from Donald Trump and push him to the side so that the next generation of Republicans, parenthesis, including her, parenthesis, could rise up? I think that's a possibility. If Trump were to win the presidency, I think her future could be bright. I think there could be cabinet positions potentially in her future. There are parts of the House Republican leadership that she has not yet attained that could be in her future. So I don't think she's yet sort of burned any bridges. I think she's essentially right back where she was before this vice presidential talk began.
We just have a minute or two left in today's conversation, but let me ask you about another member of that next generation, and that is Speaker Mike Johnson. He found himself as Speaker kind of unexpectedly after the fall of Kevin McCarthy. How does his future look, given the open question of who will be in control of Congress in the next term?
I think at the moment his stock among his colleagues is on the rise. He survived an effort to replicate what happened with Kevin McCarthy, an effort within the Republican Party to remove him as the Speaker a few months ago, and was saved from that by some Democrats, actually, who concluded that, a House run by Mike Johnson was better than more stasis, more impasse, and somebody maybe even more conservative. The conventional wisdom had been for a while that if the Republicans hang on to control of the House, Mike Johnson would be pushed out. I think that might not be the case anymore. I think he, of course, Johnson has attached himself to Trump. If Trump wins, that would augur well for the Republicans hanging on to the House. Given the current dynamics, Trump would seem inclined to support the retention of Mike Johnson as the Speaker. Now, if Harris wins, if Harris wins emphatically, I guess that would increase the Democrats' chances of taking back the House. I still don't think that's. I think it's more likely than not that the House will be Republican.
You do.
I do. So if the House were to go Democratic, I don't think Mike Johnson would be retained as the minority leader. The way of electing a minority leader is much. It's much easier to elect a minority leader. All you need in that case is a majority of the Republicans. You don't need a majority of the entire House like you do to become Speaker. I think there would be other. I think he would be judged as having, you know, not gotten the job done, and that there would be other ambitious Republicans. Jim Jordan comes immediately to mind, who would want to be the minority leader, and that would be easier to get. It's easy, as I say, just easier in terms of the votes you need to come up with. You need a majority of the Republicans to become the minority leader if they're the minority, and that could spell the end of Mike Johnson.
And does the same dynamic in your mind apply to Hakeem Jeffries' future? You know, it kind of depends on which office he gets, the nice one or the not as nice one.
No, I think Hakeem Jeffries is in a very solid position as the leader of the House Democrats, whether they are in the minority or in the majority. I think he is unrivaled at the moment. He seems to have put together a good team of deputies, none of whom is showing any signs of clamoring for the top job. He's made good use of Nancy Pelosi as a Speaker Emerita. She, of course, allowed Ms. Pelosi to, of course, take the lead. In the campaign, quiet, sub rosa, not so sub rosa campaign that got rid of Joe Biden. So, no, I think he's in great shape.
We've been speaking with David Hawkins, senior editor of The American Leader, who formerly worked at The Fulcrum and CQ and Roll Call. Always a pleasure, David. And when we come back the next time, let's talk about those 9 people just down the street from all of this political stuff we've been talking about.
Thanks, Ian. Looking forward to it.